It's almost universal, whether it's two wheels, four wheels, 18 wheels, no wheels. So many of us have a special memory involving a vehicle or a story about a car we've loved. Even if you can't tell a crankshaft from a driveshaft, I want to hear the story of the vehicle that moved you. I'm Blake Jackson, and this is Autobiography. Well, we're talking with Neil Rochalski. He is the creative genius behind Dirty Monkey Customs. And Neil, thank you for being with us today.
I'm looking forward to it.
Well, Autobiography, we want to know about the vehicle that moved you. What's your story, Neil?
Well, I've always been into cars in some way, shape, or form. And that's thanks to my dad. He never really was a true hot rodder per se, but he taught me the hard way to learn how to fix our own cars and twist wrenches and really enjoy that. And then I got the opportunity to hot rod his pickup truck a little bit, much to his dismay, but he had the coolest hot rod truck camper on the highway, but back in high school. So it all started out there and just following along with the other guys in my age group back in high school in the 80s, got into hot rodding, mechanics class in high school, and just really kind of took off from there. And it's been a passion that's followed me to today.
And what was the truck of your dad's that you took the initiative on?
Oh God, his was a 76, 78 Chevy 3/4 ton. With a 14, 15, 16 foot camper on the back, something like that. And so I used to use that to go to high school as my vehicle. And of course, having a 454 in it, there's no way I could leave that alone.
Another truck from the General Motors Chevrolet CK line, the 1978 3/4 ton was part of the third generation, which some people call rounded line and some call square bodies. Sadly for Neil and his dad, this was just after GM got rid of the faux wood grain exterior trim. But they had their disappointment soothed by the big block 454, banging out 230 horsepower and 360 foot-pounds of torque.
So very quickly pulled off his factory tires and rims and put on some nice chrome rims and then put some exhaust on it so it had a good rumble to it. And then kind of pushed further and got into the red velvet interior for him, which he was really pleased about. But it's funny because he always gave me a lot of grief about doing all of that. But I also remember pulling into the campgrounds when we'd go on family vacations, and he'd on purpose rev the daylights out of that thing. And all the old guys would start coming around as soon as we got that camper parked. They all wanted to see what was under the hood. And he'd always say, look what my stupid kid did to my truck. But always with a grin, right?
Yeah.
It took a few years for him to actually find out. One of my friends just totally busted me on it. But we used to somewhat, quote unquote, race it on the weekend. And it did pretty good for an old man's truck.
Did you do any work on the engine?
Pretty much exhaust, air cleaner. Back then, there wasn't really... without really stripping it down, there wasn't really too much we could do, but a little cosmetic, the open air cleaner and the headers and a loud exhaust and that stuff. And it woke it up pretty good.
That was my next question, asking if you flipped the air cleaner, took the lid off the air cleaner and then flipped it over.
Absolutely. That's hot rodding 101.
Yeah. That was the first thing I did with my El Camino.
There you go.
Tip the air cleaner. Whatever happened to the truck?
I actually drove it for quite a few years, and then he ended up selling it off. Actually, that selling it off was to a fellow that helped me work on my 1951 GM truck many years later. So that stayed in the family for a long time, Dad's. And then we finally sold it off and used some of that to put in the time and effort onto my 1951 truck.
And tell us about your 51. Was that a hot rod?
It was a really ugly farm truck out of Saskatchewan that somebody started making a hot rod out of it. They put a small block Chevy in it, a really small block shift, 305, I think, something like that way back then, and some rims and primer. And I bought it from a fella, a work colleague, drove it for a couple of years. It was the greatest truck. Back then, nobody had those. Nobody wanted them. They were all still on the farm. And we're talking back in 97. And I drove it to and from college, which was a load of fun, because when you drove it in the rain or in the snow, the holes in the floor were so big, your pants were soaked by the time you got to where you went.
Yeah.
And you drove it up the, you know, I grew up in Calgary, so if you drove it on the Deerfoot, you know, if you hit the brakes, you change lanes. And it was never consistent. Sometimes it was left, sometimes it was right. So you always wanted to try and really gauge when you actually had to slow down. And if you hit a good left turn, the passenger door would open.
Automatic.
So it was entertaining. Yeah, and of course, I'd never tell the passenger that that was going to happen, because that was just entertainment factor right there.
Were there seatbelts in that truck?
There still isn't. Nope, didn't come from the factory, still don't have them.
I say back then, seatbelts were for astronauts and jet pilots.
That's right. That's right. You just hung on tighter.
And do you still have that truck?
Yeah, actually, that one, I've been building it for 20 years. And by building, I mean working on it here, there, and little bits each year. And it actually was a part for, gosh, a good 15 years. And then it just made it back on the road about 5 years ago, first time. And it's on the road now, and it's a load of fun. Nothing like what it was before.
Give us a snapshot of the truck now.
Let's see. It's sitting on a 78 Chevy short box frame. It's all in black epoxy primer, so kind of a flat black. It's got a stroked out 350 in it now. So it's a 389 stroker that's in it. Got a tranny, a turbo 350 tranny that was built by a guy who used to build transmissions for the monster trucks. It's all on air suspension. It's got bright orange old school smoothie rims and white walls, and it's on air ride. So it's when it's sitting in the parking lot, the bumpers, actually front bumpers, sit on the ground.
Very cool. Now, I was on your website and I noticed a truck. Is this the said truck on your website?
That's the one.
And what is your website?
Dirty Monkey Customs .ca, and that's customs with a K.
Okay.
And that's the apparel and some of my photography and some stuff that I catch at car shows and other people's cars too.
Well, that sounds exciting. I'm going to encourage everyone to check out this website, and I'll give it again at the end here. But Neil, thank you very much. Sorry, we're going to have to cut that part out.
Sure.
I was getting too excited. Neil, thank you very much for coming on Autobiography, and it was awesome to hear about. I can't even talk this evening. Lots of editing.
There you go.
It's why I started this show, to be able to hear about trucks like your dad's 3/4 ton that you fixed up without his blessing, and and to hear about your 51 and how it became an obsession for you. So, Neil, that's perfect, and we'll check out your website. Where in the country are you if people are looking out for you?
I'm now in the Okanagan. I'm in Enderby, which is just a little bit north of Vernon. So nice little quiet, sleepy town.
Well, Neil, thank you very much. I want to tell you to buckle up, but I'm not sure if you have the ability. But in any case, drive safe and drive fun.
Awesome. Thanks. Great chatting with you.
Thank you very much, Neil Grochowski, telling us about your dad's truck that you took and hot-rodded, and he was so proud of you. That's awesome. Great story. If you want to check out more of Neil's work, you can go to dirtymonkeycustoms.ca, and that is customs with a K, because they're hot rodders and they're super cool, also with a K. The Autobiography Podcast, thank you for joining us. My name is Blake Jackson. And if you have a story about the vehicle that moved you, please let us know, autobiographypod@gmail.com, or pretty much every social media platform out there. Just do some looking, Autobiography Podcast. And I would love to hear your story, and I would love for you to follow us and listen to every episode that's coming up, because we're having a great time with this. I love cars. I love stories about cars, and I would like to hear yours. It's time for another Myth of the Machine. I'll be clear. This is actually my cousin coming on to do me a favor. He is general manager for the Automobile Dealer Exchange Services of America, Saskatoon branch. It is Mr. Kyle Much.
Hey, well, thanks, Blake, for having me. This is awesome.
Yeah, well, thanks for coming on. I know you as a car guy. I know you as someone who lives and breathes automobiles. So in inviting you on to tell us about a car that meant a lot, I was very curious to know which one that you would pick. So, Kyle, what's the vehicle that moved you?
According to mom and dad, my first word as a baby was car keys, so it kind of spelled it out from there. There's a few neat vehicles that I've had the privilege to drive a few times. You can attest to this one, Blake. The Jag is probably one that sticks out in my mind. I can say I don't think I'll ever own another one unless I'm really prepared to commit to it. So it was an 89 XJ12. It was a Sovereign. So that was the 5.3 V12 Jag, 299 horsepower. It was sapphire blue, doe skin interior, just a beautiful car, like classic Jaguar.
Just going to pause for a sec and tell you about the vehicle tonight. Based on the XJS coupe, the Jaguar XJ12 has been described as an experience in sheer luxury, comfort, and smooth power. Some of the cars sold featured one of the world's first offerings of a rudimentary trip computer. Top speed on the XJ12 was 240 kilometers per hour, or 149.5 miles an hour.
Smooth, never-ending power. It was like driving a high-speed lazy boy, getting about 8 miles per gallon if you're lucky. You came to visit me actually when I had that car sale when I was living in England, and I just remember we were driving, and I think it was still pretty early. We got up so we could catch a ferry. We were going across the channel. And you were sleeping. It's a right-hand drive car. You were sleeping on the left-hand side of the car. And you rolled over and just said, "Feels like we're going pretty fast, Kyle." I said, "Yeah, I'm doing about 100. You go, "Yeah, okay, that's fine." Rolled over and went back to bed. Your vet went back to sleep in the car. And then you rolled over again about 2 seconds later and went, "Hold on, miles or kilometers an hour?" Said, "Miles." You go, "Oh, shit, I'm going back to bed. I don't want to be alive when we crash."
Yeah, and I remember 100 mile an hour for that car was nothing.
It had P7 Pirellis on it, and it was the easiest thing in the world to roast those tires if you wanted to.
So it was a V12, but yep. How big was it?
So a 5.3 liter, 299 horsepower. I can't remember the torque rating on it, but it had the three-speed, I believe it was a three-speed Bosch Warner transmission. Like, really nice, very smooth car. Just a real bugger to work on. That V12 was so big. Excuse me. The car was actually built for the six cylinder motor, and they couldn't even shoehorn that V12 in there. What they ended up doing with the V12 is they actually built the front end of that car around the motor. That's the only way you could get it in to work on it. And most of the time, if you did have to do any work on that car, you were taking the whole front end of that car off.
Did you have to do work on the car by yourself?
I did do a little bit of work. I kind of felt like I was qualified to work for the circus after. You had to be a little bit of a contortionist to work on it. You got to stuff your hands into some pretty small spaces. Because I wasn't taking the front end off. I was just, you know, as a young kid, I didn't have a lot of tools. I had pretty crude tools and just kind of work with what you had, right? So.
And you were in England. Where did you work on it? Did you have a shop? Did you have a garage?
No, I just had a little garage in the back of the yard there. And it was the driveway to get between the two houses. So the driveway went between our house and our neighbor's house, and it was a shared driveway to get down the driveway and into the garage. I'd have to back in. I couldn't drive in, or I wouldn't have the steering radius, or the steering on that car wouldn't let me crank it to get into the garage. So I'd back in, and I had about a half inch of room on either side of the mirrors, and I could just wedge it into the garage. And yeah, definitely, it's not a big car, but for over there, it was definitely a big car. Yeah, and then to work on it, I'd usually have to have the front end of the car sticking out of the garage. So I'd kind of half be inside, half outside working on it. But it was a labor of love sometimes working on that thing.
And we mentioned how fast it could go effortlessly. 100 miles an hour was nothing. I remember taking it across the channel, as you mentioned, with you and being on the Autobahn. I can't recall myself. How fast did you?
Well, I seem to remember the speedometer in that going to 160 miles per hour. And I got up there a few times. I got close to it a few times. I don't think I ever got it all the way to the end, though. I've had it up well over 100 miles an hour a few times, but I think I wussed out before I ever got anywhere close to that 160 mile per hour range.
You mentioned working in wholesale auction. What are some of the vehicles coming through that excite you? What's really caught in your eye recently?
Well, we're in the middle of truck country, so we always get lots of trucks in your average run of the mill domestics, but we've had a lot of really interesting pieces, and that's what I love about the auction. Every week there's always some little gem, something that completely catches off guard. And of course it's spring market right now, so everybody's bringing out all their sports cars. We've had quite a few Corvettes. That's your typical there in the Challengers. A couple weeks ago, we had a Ferrari. We had a 2018 Ferrari 488 GTB. And of course, iconic red Ferrari, absolutely beautiful, beautiful, beautiful car. I did get in the car. It's obviously a pristine piece, something that you want to keep, the hands of the public off a little bit there, when it's in your care. But I did get into it and I fired it up and I moved it ahead about 12 inches. So I can now officially say that I have driven a Ferrari. We even auctioned off an ice cream truck a little while ago.
Really?
Yeah. That was when we could still drive through the sale lanes, and we had customers in the sale lanes while the auction was going on. Well, they were all out in the arena, so we went out and got some Dairy Queen treats and made the driver pass them out as he was going through the lanes. That was pretty fun.
It would be interesting to ask you about your dream car, but I'm actually more interested right now, as a man who's purchased a lot of vehicles, looked at a lot of vehicles, certainly shopped for a lot of vehicles. What's the one that got away? Has there ever been the white whale, one that you almost had your hands on and slipped through your grasp?
That's a really long story. There's tons of them. And there's a whole bunch. That's the thing in this industry is I was just told a little while ago, in my industry, it's great to love cars and to be passionate about it. But at the same time, don't fall in love with them. Don't fall in love with any one car. That was probably pretty good advice for somebody like me, because every time I see a car, I think, oh yeah, it'd be so awesome. It'd be so nice to have that car. Yeah. And I think if you talk about the one that got away, I don't know if there's any one particular one that got away, but there's a whole lot of woulda, coulda, shouldas.
What is your dream car?
Oh, well, that one's even a tough one too. I was thinking, you know, it would be a lot of fun to have, just to have an old Shelby. If I wanted to go with something that was fun and muscly and just a beautiful car, an old Shelby would be an awesome car to have. Like, it's the iconic. I feel kind of cheesy saying it because everybody's like, oh yeah, I want like the late 60s Mustang Shelby. A GT500 Shelby would be anybody's dream. There is still, you look at some of the early 60s Mercedes though as well too. The the Gullwing Mercedes or even an SL300 convertible Mercedes back in the early 60s. Those are, you can't help but fall in love with a car like that. Or, a 356 Porsche, the 356 Porsche, either the convertible or the coupe, because those are just, again, same thing. You just, I'm picturing these cars in my mind, and you just, it's almost like I'm talking about a woman. They've got these curves, and you just kind of want to touch and feel and smell, and you kind of want to caress them like a beautiful woman almost, right? When you get into driving, it's, they're things of beauty. So if I could pick one, ask Amanda, and every time we go anywhere, I always say, oh yeah, I would love to have a car like this, or this is what I want. And she actually at one point kept a notebook in her purse and write down every time I said that. And we had pages and pages of cars.
Well, it's like music, or it's like your favorite song, or it's like your favorite food. It's you're allowed to change, and there's so much out there to appreciate. It's hard to nail it down to just one.
That's a really good way to put it. I love food too. I don't know if I could pick a favorite food, which is also probably why I'm in the shape that I'm in. But hey.
It's just muscle. Right on. Well, you mentioned putting the kids to bed, so I'm going to let you get on with your life, but I thank you for coming on with me for Autobiography. It was good to hear about the Jaguar again, and good to hear about some of your work at the auction. Once again, Kyle Much, General Manager for Automobile Dealer Exchange Services of America, Saskatoon Branch. So thanks, Kyle, very much.
Hey, thank you, Blake. This is a lot of fun.
The Jaguar. I do remember that car. It was legendary. Sometimes 8 cylinders won't cut it. You need 12. So thank you very much, Kyle Much. Much with a T. And, of course, he is a GM out at the Automotive Dealer Exchange Services of America. And thank you, Neil, for telling us about your truck and your dad's truck and how you learned to work on vehicles. And he's still into vehicles. If you want to check out his work, dirtymonkeycustoms.ca. That is customs with a K. Check that out. And check out Autobiography Podcast on Facebook, on Twitter, on Spotify, iTunes, everywhere. We would like to hear from you. We would like your love. We would like you to share and follow. And I would love for you to be here next time on the Autobiography Podcast. My name is Blake Jackson. Till then, keep your wheels on the road and a tarp on your load.